The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PlayUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 119. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where I bring you experts in the field to talk shop. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube, or join the mailing list at ronmckeefery.com to stay up to date with the latest guests and anything else that I have going on. This week, excited to have Rick Howard with us. Rick is the Director of Fitness and Sports Performance at Wilmington Country Club. He is the NSCA Mid-Atlantic Regional Coordinator, and he's an adjunct faculty member on a couple different universities' staffs. And so I wanted to bring Rick on. You know, we had a great conversation about long-term athletic development. And, you know, as a father with four kids and all of them in the teenage range now, you know, it's really important to me, you know, is to really find out when we should be starting our kids strength training. What is, you know, what's that long-term plan look like, and how can we build each year as opposed to just, you know, throwing them, you know, into the high school programs or into middle school programs and not really knowing what's going on. And so we get into that. We talk a little bit about when we should start, what, you know, what that plan should look like, some of the different models out there, and really, really an interesting conversation. So I know you're going to get a ton out of it. Before we start, though, we want to make sure we recognize all of our sponsors. We have PlayUSA, EliteForm, Sorinex, and of course, Ignition APG. And you know, I was just going through, and we're you know, we use the season to kind of plan out the winter and the summer, and you know, and so we're working on our winter program. And Ben Creamer, who's been on the show, you know, look up the show for him, but works at Ignition and does their hand-to-hand combat training. He was a guy that we brought in at Cincinnati, and just a phenomenal person first, but a great strength coach as well, and martial artist, and does some fantastic stuff. And he created an awesome video, DVD, a program that you can order, and turned out really, really good. And so I'd encourage you to go to ignitionapg.com, you know, go to the products, click the hand-to-hand combat training, but really cool stuff. And if you work with any of the, you know, the gladiator type sports, definitely applicable in the trenches. We've had them come up and work with our team, and just like I said, just some great stuff. So check out Ignition APG. Find them on Facebook or Twitter. Follow them. They're always putting out some inspirational messages, and can't say enough about the people there and the way that they go about their business. So check them out. Lastly, you know, before we get started, can't thank everybody enough for the unbelievable support from the book launch. And we launched it early. You know, it got out there a little bit early, you know, than I wanted it to. We had some back-end marketing type stuff to do, but people found it on Amazon early and started doing it. So we released it, and man, I can't be happier, prouder of the project. It's an international bestseller. It's in the top 10 pretty much in countries around the world. Number 2 in the US, number 1 in the UK now, number 1 in Germany, I think in the top 5 in Australia. And so man, I couldn't even begin to think that it was going to do this well, but I do appreciate the support, and I think it's a great message, you know, and it's something that's missing a little bit in the strength and conditioning community, talking about the business of being a strength coach and going in and becoming a great technician and being a great manager, and the entrepreneurial side of what we do. And Really just kind of uses life lessons that I've learned through my career. I'm very transparent, kind of tell you the whole story. And I think it's both encouraging as well as informative. And so if you have not picked up your copy, go to Amazon. If you're still kind of on the fence, go download a free chapter at CEOstrengthcoach.com just to kind of get a feel for it. But, you know, I think it's something that if you're a strength coach, you'll really appreciate and identify with as you go along in your journey. So check that out, CEOstrengthcoach.com, or go to Amazon and pick up your copy. Want to get to Rick. Enjoy this episode. We'll see you on the other side. Take care. All right, guys. Welcome back to Iron Gym Chalk Talk. Excited to have Rick Howard with us. Rick is a guy I met last year for the first time. Heard a lot about at the NSCA Southeast Regional Conference. And I think you would agree, Rick, that's a top-notch conference each and every year. But man, I enjoyed his presentation. Enjoyed the opportunity to talk to him. And appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Hey, Ron, thanks for having me on. And I agree with you. Gary Schofield does a great job down in the Southeast region. He runs a regional conference like a national conference.
That's right.
We have top-rated speakers from around the country, three separate tracks, over 250 people show up. So it really is. And he makes it a nice collegial feel. So strength coaches, practitioners, everybody gets to hang around together and learn from one another in a nice, relaxed environment. Really good job.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, man. Well, Rick, hey, you got an interesting background, so let's get into that a little bit. You know, how did you get into strength and conditioning, and then kind of what's led you to your current position?
Yeah, it's an interesting question that we could have quite a conversation about. I've been around for a while, and somebody was asking me my present job, how long I've been doing strength and conditioning, and I've been over 30 years.
Wow.
That I've been in the field. So, you know, I'm not the godfather like Boyd Epley, certainly, but I've been around for a while, and I kind of came up more through the personal trainer ranks, I would say, than actual strength coaches. But interestingly enough, a lot of schools don't have strength coaches, so they need to rely on somebody to help them out. So from the facilities where I was, I got a lot of calls from local schools to help put together a program for them. And that's really how I got involved with working with kids, which is kind of my favorite, my niche, I guess you could say. What I like to do is work with kids. So I got into it through that by having schools contact me. We started having interns from some of the local high schools come in to our fitness centers who might be interested in a fitness career. Mm-hmm. And then I would go to their contests and games and put their programs together in off season. So I would go visit the schools. That actually led to a position in the school district of Philadelphia. So I was the director of athletics for a number of years. So we oversaw all of the sports for grades 6 through 12, which was probably 140 middle schools, grades 6 to 8,
wow,
and almost 100 high schools. So it's pretty big. So I have a broad range of experience.
Absolutely. And what's your current role then, obviously?
Current role is I'm an adjunct professor at Westchester University in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and at Rowan University, which is in Glassboro, New Jersey. I've been in a couple other schools, but those are my two primary ones. And I have an interesting new job. I'm the director of fitness and sports performance at the Wilmington Country Club in Wilmington, Delaware.
So
in our little tri-state area. And, it's kind of an interesting area. You wouldn't really think that would be a hotbed for strength and conditioning. But one thing I've learned since I've been there is private schools in this area, at least, do not even have physical education.
Wow.
Their sports serve as their phys ed. So we have a lot of kids who really need to get into a program. They might play a sport for two or three seasons, so then they come to us during their, quote, off season to develop their program. We did a lot of work this summer with a lot of kids, so we worked with well over 100, 150 kids on different programs, all from ages 7 to 18.
Absolutely. Wow.
Pretty cool.
Well, that's, you know, and I mean, I think we both agree the fact that, I mean, the physical education is declining across the country in terms of its being offering and being a legitimate part of the curriculum. But obviously, you're doing a lot of work with your present, you know, you're going after, you know, you're working on your PhD and your main focus has been long-term athletic development, and you're getting an opportunity to do that with working with these young athletes from the middle school, the high schools, and sometimes you're seeing them go through, you know, almost 7-8 years probably, you know.
That's exactly right.
With long-term athletic development, you know, it's kind of been a buzzword. What exactly is that? How's that defined?
I think really, and Patrick McHenry has done a lot of presentations. One of the words he always uses, the phrases, is, you know, the Al Bundy peak by Friday. And, you know, that's kind of been the mentality that a lot of us have run with, that, you know, as long as we win the next game, that's what we mean by long term. Right. You know, what do we need to do to win this week? Rather than saying what's really best from the child's perspective for long-term athletic development, how do we take them from a younger age and develop their fundamental motor skills, their sports skills, their muscular strength, all of the fitness attributes in a plan? So it doesn't have to be a set-in-stone plan, but at least there are guidelines. So they refer to the long-term athletic development models as a model. Here's a template you can use, but you would really need to fill it in based on the needs of your specific athletes, or even those who aren't athletes yet, but at least to make sure that they get the fundamental motor skills so that they have the opportunity to step in and participate in athletics. You know, most of our kids don't peak that early. So a lot of times when we think that we can start strength training in high school, for example, the National Strength and Conditioning Association's position paper recommends that kids start strength training around the same age they start playing sports, around 8 years. So if we're waiting until they're 15, we're like, wow, we just lost 7 years.
Yeah.
What, how are we going to make that up? So, you know, it's really integral component to say, what do we need to do when kids start? Most models started around age 6, just with an active start, they call it. So just to get kids moving, show them how important it is to move and to develop those habits, and then take them through a progression. A lot of the models were kind of thinking along the lines of almost an Olympic gold medal. So for an Olympic model, you would peak around age 25. So the models are kind of set up in that kind of a framework, but we can kind of look at it in our current sports system where, you know, a lot of us are trying to get kids into college or get kids to be able to play in high school. So we look at it more along the lines of, okay, what are the fundamental motor skills we need to learn and master by like age 10? How do we add strength exercises to build the repertoire of exercises? So by the time they get to high school, our high school strength coaches don't have to teach our kids the exercise. They actually have a group of kids who know what strength and conditioning is. And then they can work together with college coaches and say, all right, what are those lifts you're going to need in college? Mm-hmm. And then build up in both directions. So it's really heavily reliant. And there are more and more youth coaches out there who are like below the high school level who are now working with kids in programs. You know, I mentioned earlier about the personal training aspect. I think because a lot of these programs don't have strength coaches necessarily, it's a great opportunity for a strength coach or a personal trainer who likes working with kids. And my word of caution always is, go work with a group of kids before you decide that's what you want to do. It's not for everybody.
That's right.
You know, and among my staff, there are a lot of staff who like working one-on-one or in small groups. So once you get a group of 20 kids, and not every kid wants to be there.
Yeah.
So how do you engage all those kids and make it exciting, make it fun, make it so that it's something they like to do and want to continue to do? It's not easy. So it takes a lot of planning and it needs a lot of background knowledge for you.
Absolutely. And if you're going to, you know, end up coaching higher level athletes, if you can get the 6-year-olds to do it, then you got a pretty good chance of being able to get the higher athletes to do it as well. So it's great training ground for sure. But, you know, a couple things I want to pull out there. You know, one, you know, a lot of programs are using not just the private schools up in that area, but there's a lot of programs across the country that are using sport as their physical education anymore. How do you think, especially, I mean, my daughters, they had to try out for middle school track last year. Wow. I couldn't even believe that you had to try out for a middle school sport, you know. How do you think sport specialization has had a detrimental effect on developing those fundamental motor skills?
You know, I think we're seeing that run across all age groups and across all income levels and across all areas of the country. So it's kind of disappointing, especially now with everything we know, that first of all, the position statements indicate that kids shouldn't specialize, even looking at the long-term athletic development models, pretty much until high school.
Right.
So around age 15 is generally the recommended time to really start focusing on that one sport. But before then, you know, parents are chasing that elusive college scholarship they think that their kid is going to get. But, you know, all the research is indicating, and they have that huge graphic that they've been borrowing from Ohio State, where they show that almost every athlete who played at Ohio State, you know, played 2 or 3 sports all the way through high school. I'm like, wow, maybe there is something to that. But we all remember the Tiger Woods story about how all he ever did was golf, look how good he is. So I think it's done a huge disservice to our kids. And if you look at the sports model we have in the United States, it's kind of interesting when you think about it, because we always say that kids are not miniature adults. and we shouldn't water down what we do for adults and for kids. But when you look at a lot of our youth sports, that's exactly what we did. You look at Little League Baseball, how that was created. Mm-hmm. It was created by a guy in Pennsylvania who wanted his nephews to have an opportunity to play baseball. So I said, all right, so we'll make the field a little smaller, you know, bats a little lighter. So they didn't say, what are the fundamental motor skills you need to learn and the different skills specifically related to baseball kids need to be able to gain to be able to be athletic, to develop athleticism, which is a much broader realm of fitness attributes than just playing games all summer long on a team with the hopes of getting, you know, a local sponsor, getting onto the World Series, and, you know, the product became the goal, whereas in a long-term athletic development model, the process should be the goal. What are the kids learning? What are they getting out of it? And are they actually enjoying it to want to get to the next level? We're stuck in that situation where about 70% of kids drop out of sports by the time they hit age 13. So good luck to our high school coaches. You know, their pool of talent has just shrunk.
Right.
What we really want to do is, you know, not have cuts in middle school track. We want everybody to learn all the different sports. We don't even have to set the systems up there or the seasons like we do, but we do it just out of convenience because that's just what we're used to. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think a lot of schools really like a summer camp model where kids kind of rotate through all kinds of activities. So they're getting all the skills throughout the summer. Like, why can't we do this all the time? Or why isn't physical education set up this way? You know, phys ed's kind of gotten into this notion, and there are a lot of really wonderful programs in phys ed. So, you know, we're not here bashing physical education. Right. Everybody knows that we need daily quality physical education. But since that isn't happening yet, what are the steps we can take to get the administrators to recognize how important that is? And some of those steps would be to develop those fundamental motor skills and Shape America, the organization that oversees health and phys ed teachers, have based all of their national standards on physical literacy, which has been defined, redefined. But basically, it's that skill set that every kid could have of all their motor skill abilities, all of their speed, strength, agility, balance, coordination, in a variety of sports settings, in a variety of conditions, and within their given level of ability. So it doesn't mean that if you're not at a certain level by age 10, that you should no longer be playing that sport. And that's kind of what we're doing in middle schools when we're cutting kids. And, you know, your daughters might be early maturers, so they're right on level to do really well and good for them. But they might be late maturers where they're really not going to hit their stride, so to speak, until high school. So to take them away from that sport now, we've done them a huge disservice.
That's right. No, my oldest daughter was a state qualifier in cross country. She made one event on the middle school team. I couldn't even believe it, you know. And you know, I remember, you know, going through when my son was playing football, and it's exactly what I said. I walked out on the field and I'm like, okay, well, why isn't he rotating around and catching the ball and throwing the ball, right, and, you know, tackling and blocking, and it's just a fundamental skill set that you go around and learn. Because, you know, I had a conversation with their youth sport coach, and I'm like, look, you know, you're wanting to specialize these guys, you know, into these positions and things along those lines. But I mean, look at the kid over there picking daisies, and his dad is 6'5". That kid's probably not going to be a wide receiver. He's going to probably be a lineman or something. You know, he needs to develop all these different skills. So I couldn't agree more. And you know, it seems obvious, but it's not, right, for some reason.
Yep.
You know, another thing you pulled in there was, okay, you said in the Olympic model, or, you know, peaking at 25 and starting at 6 years old. You know, but you didn't mean weight training at 6 years old. You meant movement training at 6 years old. And then at what point should kids start to actually weight train?
I mean, that's an interesting question, because when you look at the long-term athletic development models, a lot of them do not really follow what the position statement from the national kids should actually start strength training. And according to a lot of the long-term athletic development models, they're kind of recommending only body weight exercises up until peak height velocity or physical maturity, whichever way you want to look at it, which means that most of our kids wouldn't start doing strength training until around age 14, give or take. So the problem with that, as we said before, is if we can actually start resistance training earlier, then we would be at a distinct advantage. The key is to have quality supervision to oversee how kids actually grow and develop, to know at what rate they can actually strength train or engage in a program. There was a position statement NSCA did in 2009 on resistance training that said that kids can actually start resistance training around age 8. but it should be a variety of implements. So you're going to use some body weight, you're going to use some lightweight, some dumbbells, maybe a couple machines, some bands, medicine balls, a whole variety of implements, because the goal as part of a long-term process is the kids get to learn how to do different exercises with different implements within their own area of expertise. One of the problems with these models that say to only do body weight is we do have an obesity epidemic in the country. So if you start asking your overweight kids to do push-ups and other body weight exercises, they're not going to be successful. That's not something they're going to be very good at. So right. We need to look at all different sizes, ages, and varieties of kids, how much experience they have, and give them something that they can be successful at, and then build on that. So a lot of what we do is for younger kids, we do what's called integrative neuromuscular training, which involves some muscle strength exercises. It involves a motor skill development. You kind of look for any deficiencies they might have in motor skills, because if you have deficient motor skills, imagine that your walking or skipping or jogging pattern is not very effective. How well are you going to do lunges? It's going to throw that pattern off. So what are some of the exercises we can give to help reinforce those motor patterns, but then also include some games and some fun activities, because kids do all this because it's fun. They don't say, I want to be a beast when I'm 14, 15 years old. They do it because they want to have a good time. And feel stronger too. So it's important to look at, in the models, we really should start kids as young as possible. There was a position statement in the British Journal of Sports Medicine last year that talked about the same type of things that kids should be able to do that. It implemented the document that came out of the UK. But even for the Olympic lifts, if we can teach kids in elementary school, fourth grade, how to do the Olympic lifts with the dowel, just to practice the techniques, to build the process, then once they hit puberty, or what they call adolescent awkwardness, they'll still know the motion. And then you can kind of retrain through that developmental peak. Mm-hmm. And then once they're in their adult phase, wow, now they're really good at the mechanics of it. And as we know in Olympic lifting, if you don't have the technique, it's not going to help you a whole lot. So it really does help build that model. What happens with a lot of our coaches, they don't really understand the adolescent awkwardness phase where kids' arms are grown, but their legs aren't, or the legs are grown, torso didn't, or whatever's going on. And you come to practice one day and you're like, wow, what happened to you? You were coordinated last week. Well, you know, they're going through that growth spurt. We have to be aware of that and help get them through that and retrain them more or less on almost all the exercises. So some of the models actually say that that's kind of around the time we want to start training kids. Well, that's not really setting them up for success because they're growing in different ways, and you want them to already know what those fundamentals are and then retrain them to make it better.
Sure. So, you know, take it through and from a kind of a program design standpoint, you know, the youth sports, you know, maybe before fifth grade, you know, they're doing their strength training, their movement training, whatever, you know, you want to call it at practice. What should a youth sport coach or a parent, what should that entail?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think one of the big things that I'm hearing a lot about lately is, you know, I mentioned earlier, that it has to be with quality instruction. And there are a lot of coaches, through no fault of their own, a lot of our coaches are volunteers, but a lot of what we see happening is that they have not really gained the level of knowledge of youth growth and development, so they don't have the pediatric exercise science concepts down to be able to be understood. And then on the other side of that is that, you know, the kids haven't really had any of that practice either, and their parents have a different notion that they should be doing what they call sports-specific exercises only, which is the wrong way to go, because right. you're going to end up overtraining if you keep doing the same thing in practice in your strength and conditioning. So how do you develop that well-rounded program? So we ask for coaches to do and for parents to look for somebody who actually has a plan. A lot of times what we've seen going out to some of these programs is that, you know, they might have seen a commercial and they say, wow, look, I saw that guy with the ropes. Let's do ropes. Or, you know, it's crazy to say, but you see that sometimes. So you really want to say, what is your strength and conditioning plan? If we're really talking long-term athletic development, what are you doing now? Why are you doing it? How is that going to help kids be successful in sports, and not just in sports, but in physical activity for a lifetime? You know, not all of our kids, we hope they all play sports. And I think the biggest reason a lot of adults don't play sports is they didn't get the motor skills they needed when they were younger, so their toolbox got really small. There wasn't a whole lot for them to choose from, so they probably got hurt because they were doing incorrect exercises, following improper techniques, or they just really were not successful, so they stopped doing it. So we really need to focus our attention on giving kids a wide variety of activities. It has to be, sometimes it should be structured, especially with the strength and conditioning part. We need to be watching the kids to make sure that they're on point. And, you know, the other thing with that is not all kids develop at the same rate. Growth and development is not linear. So we're not always going in a positive direction. There might be times that it falls back a little. We need to be aware of that so we don't ride the kid just because they're having a bad day, week, or month. We just, you know, keep them on the positive side so that they can continue to progress, move forward with it. And like I said earlier, you know, if you're in an environment and you know that most high school strength and conditioning programs are asking you to know at least how to squat, front squat, do a clean, do a bench press perhaps, and those are the exercises we want our high school kids to be prepared for, how do you put that into a program so that they're ready for that in high school?
Absolutely. Well, you know, and it's funny because until you have kids, you know, you just think that, you just assume that this just happens, you know. I had, you know, we took in a half brother of mine from Honduras at 13 years old. And, you know, we're out working out, and, you know, it's something I've been doing with our kids, you know, since they were probably 6 years old, you know, going and doing bodyweight lunges and bodyweight squats and push-ups and, you know, different things. But, you know, you're trying to teach him. I remember him trying to do jumping jacks, and it just was awkward. And I had to sit there and really, I'm like, what do you mean you can't do a jumping jack? Just do this, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
But to try to break it down, it was challenging for me, you know? And I think it's challenging for, like you said, a lot of parents and youth sport coaches that don't have have a hard time with that. So, I mean, maybe the takeaway for a lot of people listening to this show is obviously when you have kids, that's a great opportunity for you to get involved in the youth sports program, is to go in and help design maybe a movement, you know, body weight exercise, you know, maybe like kettlebells or something like that at a practice. But it's also a great opportunity to refine your teaching ability and really get down to the grassroots of how you do human movement and things along those lines. You mentioned in there the weight training part, you know, and teaching the kids, you know, especially in the middle school level, to be prepared for the lifts at the high school level. And we both agree that the high school level strength and conditioning's taken off, and it's really becoming much better than it was when we were in school. But there's still a lot of programs that don't have a legitimate high school program. Mm-hmm. What are those, you know, you keep mentioning those lifts that they need to be ready for. What, you know, what are the movements, the lifts that our middle school athletes, our middle school kids should be doing and learning?
You know, you mentioned them, so that was pretty cool. I was listening to what you're talking about. You know, they should be able to move in all three planes, mm-hmm. and multi-directionally. You know, there are those two prevailing philosophies out there that we either train muscles or we train movements. Well, the answer, of course, is yes. We have to train muscles and movements.
That's right.
Yeah, because our movement is going to be restricted by, if we have an imbalance in our muscles, we're not going to be able to do that movement efficiently. And likewise, if we don't develop our muscles, then our movement isn't going to happen. And if we don't do the movement, then we're never going to get proficient at moving. So we look at basically doing single leg and double leg type exercises, multi-joint exercises predominantly. But we don't want to overtax the neuromuscular system of a middle school student by having them only do multi-joint exercises. So, you know, we go back to the position statement and NSEA guidelines, and what the special interest group talks about all the time is that, how do you do it according to their training age? Like, when do you introduce a new skill in a progression so that by the time they get there, they're able to do that? Scott Solly and Larry Metters in Minnesota, for example, they do a really good job teaching the Olympic lifts by using what they call the Court of Four. So they're four developmental exercises that are basic exercises that once they get those four lifts down, it's relatively easy for them to teach kids how to do the Olympic lifts. So I'm not saying necessarily they have to be able to go through that progression, but if you can break it down for kids, it makes it a lot easier for them to learn, especially since most kids aren't getting as much PE as they used to. They don't get recess, very little unstructured free time to go play. So unless somebody is really guiding them through the process, they're not really getting it. But a lot of coaches and parents especially think that kids are developing motor skills just because they're getting older, and they don't naturally occur. We actually have to reinforce them to put them into place. So I would say that there should be at least an exercise for every major muscle group that they learn, multi-joint, single joint, and all three planes, then multi-directional, as it relates to general athleticism. So can they move quickly? Can they move their bodies under control? One of the huge things we talk about in youth sports now is, can they actually decelerate? We see a lot of injuries from kids who, you know, somebody teaches them to do a burst of energy, but then they can't control the deceleration phase.
Great.
And so they're injured in that phase too. So can they do all of those different skills? And how do you put that together over time? I've had the opportunity where I am now to actually do that program. We actually came up with a three-level program for the younger kids. So from the 7 to 9 year olds, they just do basic exercises, just fundamental movements, push-ups, body weight squats and stuff. And then once they move up into the 11 and 12 year old range, then they start doing just some fundamental movements. And we really start with the athletic stance. Can they get into a proper athletic stance? We show them what it would look like in all different sports. All right, here you are. What does that look like if you're holding a tennis racket? How about if you're defending a basketball? So you see that it's the same hip position. You just might have a different movement from your upper body with a racket or over a ball. And then we do hip hinges and different movements from the athletic position so they can see how the exercise helps to enhance what they're actually doing when they're playing sport. And then once they get that, then we start building all the exercises into the program in the level three so that no matter where they go, they have probably about 30 different exercises they already know.
Absolutely. Well, that's exactly the approach I took with my kids. Was I started with what are the common injuries, and then I worked backwards. You know,
right,
so
yep,
if you, if
yep.
Still to this day, if you go and you ask my daughters to demonstrate how to land off of a jump, they would show you exactly how to do it.
Good, yeah, that's great.
But the you mentioned now, and I think this is probably where a lot of the especially the youth sport coaches get, you know, they see stuff on TV, it looks cool, they want to implement it, and the kids see it on TV and they want to do it. You mentioned making it fun. You know, what are some tactics that you've used? What are some ways to make body weight squats and body weight push-ups and, you know, and things like that fun?
There are a lot of different ways you can do it, and one of the best ways I've learned is to ask the kids. So if you want to get kids engaged in the process and what's fun, ask them what's fun. What do they like to do? One of the groups I'm working with this summer, for some reason, they love to play kickball. So, you know, one of the important things that we're talking about in fundamental motor skill development at that age is that they should be able to kick, throw, catch, run, and do agility. So we've kind of incorporated that into the game. So I might set up an agility ladder between first and second base. So, yeah, they get to first base, then do the agility ladder between first and second. Asked them one time what they thought would actually be fun, so they wanted to play smaller games, so they would have ghost runners, and they create all kinds of really fun stuff. And then at the end of the day, they're like, wow, we did a lot of exercise, didn't we? So, yeah. So, you know, don't make it so disciplined and structured that it's not fun, but just keep them moving, keep them engaged, and then add some of these things in. And also, one thing I've learned is to explain to them why you're doing that. You know, so they can understand even the difference between a closed drill and an open drill. Like, you have to have the patterns down, but you have to also be able to react and respond to the stimulus you don't even know is coming yet to be able to learn to anticipate it.
Right.
So
right.
Once they hear all that, you know, even the 7 to 9 year olds, they understand that because they are playing sports. So they can see that out on the field, and that they see how that relates to what they're doing. And I think that's really the key for them. Like, to do it just to do it, they don't get it. But when you involve them in the process, they've learned all the different fitness attributes. They know all 5 health fitness, all 5 skills fitness. They can, when I ask them an exercise, they can tell me which one it is, which I think is pretty cool. So,
absolutely.
So they're really involved in it. So it helps.
Well, they're becoming more informed consumers, right? They got internet,
exactly.
And they got, you know,
yeah,
all
yeah.
Those types of things. But I couldn't agree with you more. You know, switching gears a little bit here, you know, you've been extremely involved with the NSCA. I mean, you're speaking internationally, nationally, you're doing a lot of research with the, you know, and helping with the, a lot of these position papers. You run the state clinic, the Northeast Regional. What, for coaches, young coaches that are listening, that they want to be involved, you know, and this is always a pet peeve of mine. It's where I go off on my soapbox usually on the show, is people not being involved any way they possibly can. And it doesn't have to be speaking necessarily, but being involved in a committee or being involved in, you know, in a committee for the state or whatever. There's lots of ways to get involved. What would be some of your advice for people that are, A, wanting to become more involved with their national, one of the national organizations, and then, B, you know, there's a lot of people that want to go and speak at these different conferences, these NSCA conferences. How would they go about doing that as well?
Well, you know, those are good questions because I'm on the conference committee and I chair the committee for all the state provincial directors. So all the state directors in the U.S. and Canada Each region has a regional coordinator. Like you said, you know, Gary is the regional coordinator down southeast. I'm the Mid-Atlantic region coordinator. There are nine different regions. And so what we end up talking about all the time is how do we create that? And a few years ago, we came up with a great concept called an advisory board. So it used to just be a state director who would run the entire show. So if we got a different state director, the show changed. So now we created an advisory board, and these are people from within each state. And we asked if there's a coach as part of the advisory board, because one of the great things NSCA does is they have a high school and a college professional strength coach of the year. And how terrific is it when each of our states can start putting forward the name of somebody they're recognizing in their state? So we're asking people to get involved in that process at the advisory board level in their state, find out what opportunities there are. People are welcome to contact me. I'd be happy to connect them to who their state director or regional coordinator is to get them involved in the process. Because that's kind of how we've shaped it now, that we want people to start speaking at the state level. So we really get that grassroots initiative. So we'd love to have you present. We just put all of our paperwork together for our regional coming up. So we do kind of the same thing. And once they really can prove themselves and get a nice review with the state, then we say, you know what, then let's invite them back to speak at the regional. Really well received. Regional clinics are usually a little larger than a state. Robert Linkle out in Southwest does a really cool thing for those who haven't really spoken before. He's created half-hour blocks.
Yeah.
So you know what, if you get out there and you freeze and you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't know it was going to be like this. Everybody's staring at me. You know, knowing that it's only a half an hour isn't as daunting as saying, wow, I have 56 minutes. So it's a pretty cool process. And, you know, when people ask me, when I'm teaching, they ask me, which organizations should they join? It's one of the questions I tell them, like, what is your opportunity with each of the organizations to be involved? Like you mentioned before, how you and I met at the Southeast Regional Conference. How would we have met as part of another organization? What is their mechanism of getting together to be able to share with one another? And that's really what we always talk about as one of the bonuses is Plugged NSCA. I think it's one of the best things they do is connect people.
Yeah.
So that people get involved and we all grow and learn from one another, and I think we're much stronger for it. So I would say reach out to your state director, get involved in the state director. You can be on the advisory board, or you know, if you don't know if you want to do that yet, at least go to the state clinic, meet people, learn from people, see what you want to do, talk to some people. We had a Delaware clinic. We didn't have anything going on in Jersey at the time. All of a sudden, 19 people were there from New Jersey and decided to meet at lunchtime and get the New Jersey clinics back up. So it's pretty exciting to see how it really does work.
No question.
Go
ahead.
But there are, you know, besides the clinics and the state level, you can sign up for committees on the NSCA website. They always have the call for committee people. I've been on the membership committee, the state director committee, I'm on the conference committee. So I think it's really cool to see how the organization works, what they're looking to do, and how we can all help. Because it's a volunteer, member-driven organization. So if we all put our hats on together and say, well, let's really make this the best. I've seen a lot more of that in the last couple of years, I think. People really stepping up and getting more involved. It's been pretty exciting to see.
I agree. I think it's definitely getting better. And I think, I think this is an obligation as strength coaches. If you're going to be a part of a national organization, that it's not just take. You know, it's not just turn your money in and you get, you know, you stay certified and that's the end of it. It's really, it has to be, for it to be powerful, it has to be something that's member driven, that really this is what we're such great people. You know, I think strength coaches are such great people because they give. Mm-hmm. I know it's hard to continue to give, but it's in our DNA and we need to continue to do that, you know, with the national organizations as well. And being involved in different committees and the advisory board and at the state level, I think is a great way to do that for sure.
Yep.
Well, buddy, this has been great. We got we kind of end the show with some resources, so just kind of quick answers here. What's been the best piece of coaching advice you've ever received?
The best piece of that's a good question. I would probably have to say to keep after it. You know, they always say remain positive, and then some people say, well, you know, it's not always positive. So if you're over positive, people see right through that. So I think it's to be genuine, but to keep after it. You might not win it today, but keep after it, and you'll get there.
I agree with that for sure. What about, when you're, say, you're interviewing people for the advisory committee or, you know, with the organization you work with or whatever, what's a typical interview question that you ask to kind of get to the root of somebody, the core of somebody?
A couple questions that we'll ask are, what do you see yourself helping with the organization? So where do you see the organization going, and what's your role in helping to get there? So we can see, are they really looking at it to help the organization grow? Because we've seen all too often that somebody is starting up a business and they say, wow, if I could hook up with the NSCA at the state level, then that's going to give my business instant credibility. So, you know, are they doing it for the right reasons is one of the big things we're looking for. You know, like with the strength coaches, we're always in it for the right reasons because, you know, that's our life. But sometimes we don't always see that, so we want to know that. The other thing that we talk about are, you know, who are some of the people you know? What are some of the clinics that you've presented at, or at least you've attended? Because a lot of times we'll have people who've been in the industry for 20, 25 years, they've never been to a clinic.
Yeah.
Like, wow, you know, there's always the, in education, there's the saying that you've been teaching for 20 years or you've been teaching 1 year 20 times. So, you know, you see that from some people that they learn something once and they just keep duplicating that because they've never continued their own education. So we look to see what have they done to really further themselves in their field.
Right. No, I agree with that. That's, you know, that's a common response that I get, you know, from, you know, the people at the NSCA, the people at the CSCCA as well, you know, why some of these people, they don't want to public speak. Well, you know, I mean, that's what we do that on a daily basis. I mean, that's a joke of a response, in my opinion. I mean, you know, if you're going to be a master strength coach or you're going to be a registered strength coach, or, you know, especially with distinction or something along those lines,
right,
it's your job, you know. And so getting out and speaking, I think, is something that should be a requirement, in my opinion. But but I agree with you on that. You had a great quote. Well, give us your inspirational quote, your motivational quote that you have hanging out there.
Yeah, you know, I've been following this one for a long time, and I found recently it was attributed to Will Rogers. I don't know why, if he actually said it, but it's, even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit there. So it kind of goes to everything we're talking about here, right? That, you know, yeah, you might be a good strength coach, but why not let people know that? Why not let people learn from you to see that you're on the right track and how you can help others be on the right track? And then by the same token, you always look at every conference, you always pick up one pearl.
Yep.
And I said, from every presentation, if I could pick up one thing, it makes me that much better. So, you know, if you're just sitting around complaining about stuff, you know, we hear from professional in the industries, right? Sometimes they'll just say, well, you know, what are they doing for me? Why should I renew? Well, that's exactly why. Don't just sit there, get up and be productive, but be part of the organization, really help it grow, help you grow, and help everyone around you.
No, I agree with that 100%. What about give us a book, app, and website recommendation?
Website would probably be, at this point in time, I think that Sports for Life in Canada, so it'd be sportforlife.ca. They have their original, most of the long-term athletic development information has been based on the work of Itzvin Valier. So it kind of goes through where they've come, how they're trying to integrate it, not just into sports, but into physical education, into social health across all of Canada. So it's kind of interesting to look at that from different perspectives. It breaks down their current model, at what ages they think that youth should be doing certain things. There's been some talk that not all of that might be applicable, but like we said, it's a model. So it was the first person to put something together and said, we've got to start somewhere. Here's where it is. I would recommend that people read. We just did a long-term athletic development review in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research. So it was in the May 2015 issue. It was a two-part review. The first part was kind of reviewing all of the different models, some of the pros and cons, because they basically are divided into physical models, psychosocial models, and then talent development models. Mm-hmm. So we kind of broke down all the different models, what works, what doesn't. Then came up with four or five different things that we need to work on. You know, early specialization, as you mentioned, how do we find solutions to get past that? How do we get more kids to be active? How do we get physical education to integrate into our sports model so the kids are getting this training all the way K to 12? So different things like that. And then I'd also look at Tom Ferry, the reporter from ESPN. He wrote a book called Game On a number of years ago, and it kind of sparked an interest in him. So Game On is a good book. I think people read Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. Kind of a classic book, which really started to take a look at some of the talent that's out there and look at the Canadian model, where they looked at the kids who were early matures and how they tended to get ahead and that ground. But then also, Tom Ferry has an organization, the Aspen Institute. So through the Aspen Institute, he's put together a lot of guides that have come out to try to steer kind of a new model for youth sports that's much more inclusive. So you wouldn't see, like you're talking about with your daughters, you know, potentially getting cut from their middle school track team. How do we create a new sports division for the United States? Well, you bring back rec programs, you bring back more developmental programs for kids across the spectrum. So you really do have, and you know, my blog that I have, I'll selfishly plug out, you know, talks about how do you fill the talent pool? How do we make sure that we have as many kids as possible who have the skills for them to decide what they want to do with it?
Right. Well, buddy, now those are fantastic resources. And, again, like I said, until you have kids of your own, I think you don't really ever consider it. But they're really, you know, when we started work training, there really wasn't a whole lot out there. But because of people like you, they're starting to be. And so I can't thank you enough for, you know, what you're doing for the profession and how you're giving back and taking action and, you know, creating some of these resources for people. But I truly appreciate it, man. I truly appreciate you coming on the show and sharing and just really admire that tenacity and that work. So thanks so much, man.
Hey, thanks, Ron. Appreciate talking coach to coach.
Absolutely.
Yeah, take care.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.